AM 1300 KGLO. Good morning. I'm Tim Fleming, and it's really my pleasure today to welcome in Dr. Matthew Fleming. And first things first, I've got to say that to my knowledge, we're not related, right?
I don't think so, no. Maybe 200 or 300 years ago, we may have been closer.
But you know, post up on Facebook that I'm going to be talking to Matt Fleming. Now, my cousin was quick to respond, wait a minute, I'm going to be on the radio with you? So it's great to meet you, though, finally, Doctor.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, heart disease, such as coronary heart disease, heart attack, congestive heart failure, congenital heart disease, the leading cause of death for men and women in the United States. And February is Heart Disease Awareness Month, and with us today is Dr. Matthew Fleming, a board-certified cardiologist with Mercy's Heart and Vascular Institute, a partnership between Mason City Clinic and Mercy Medical Center, North Iowa. Dr. Fleming has over 20 years of experience providing comprehensive cardiology care for a wide range of conditions, currently practicing at Mason City Clinic and Mercy Medical Center, North Iowa. And again, welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thank you again.
We've got some questions I just want to toss at you a little bit here this morning, if we can. It is shocking that heart disease is the leading cause of death for men and women in the U.S. Why is that?
Well, the risk factors for developing heart disease are very common clinical findings in a large number of Americans. For example, some of the risk factors, including high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and smoking, are among those risk factors that can cause heart disease. And when you look at the statistics, one out of every three Americans have at least one of these risk factors. So other risk factors can include diabetes, which has a very high prevalence in our society, as well as obesity, poor dietary habits, and just inactivity, actually, in and of itself, are also risk factors for it. So actually, it's not as surprising when you think about it, because all of those risk factors are so prevalent in our society that that's why it's actually such a common diagnosis among individuals.
Can you maybe describe a little bit the different types of heart disease? And we could probably go on this conversation for a long, long time, but just to kind of give us an idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah, so the most important, or the most common type of heart disease that we see in our practice and in most practices is coronary artery disease. And that involves just developing blockages in your coronary arteries over time. And blockages can result in people having heart attacks, people requiring different types of interventions such as balloon angioplasty and stenting or surgery. And all of these risk factors that we talked about tend to contribute to coronary artery disease. So that's definitely the most common type of heart disease that we treat. There are other types of heart disease as well. The heart is like a pump, and like most pumps, there's an electrical system that makes it work correctly. And sometimes that electrical system, independent of coronary artery disease, can cause people to have problems such as getting dizzy or lightheaded, feel their heart racing, or sometimes even pass out or have potentially fatal arrhythmias. And that's an area where subspecialists called electrophysiologists take care of those types of heart rhythm issues. Another fairly common problem associated of heart disease is congestive heart failure. And what that is that there's a weakening of the heart muscle. It's actually the number one diagnosis for people getting admitted to the hospital in the United States. And how the heart muscle gets damaged, it's usually by if people have heart attacks because of coronary artery disease. Sometimes there can be a virus or some other issue that can cause the heart to get weak. There's also valvular problems with the heart, which sometimes require surgery to correct them. And there's also a branch of cardiac conditions that people are born with, and we call that congenital heart disease. Often those issues are dealt with pediatric cardiologists. But those individuals now are living into adulthood, and so we see that as part of our practice as well.
Is heart disease mostly preventable based on lifestyle choices like exercise and eating habits, not smoking, obviously, or is it genetically predetermined?
Well, you know, individuals who have a family history of heart disease, typically those who have a family member who has a heart problem when they're less than 55, those individuals are at higher risk of developing heart disease. But really, when individuals really take care of themselves and take care of those risk factors, actually that goes an incredibly long way in preventing problems with heart disease. If someone has a family history of heart disease and they are smoking and have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, you can that sort of individual has a very high risk of having heart disease. And so to a large amount, individuals can avoid getting into that situation by modifying their risk factors for heart disease.
So diet plays into that a little bit too, yeah. Certainly. Yeah,
yeah, certainly. Good dietary, dietary habits are really important in this. Actually, for example, I think a recommendation was just a national recommendation for diets is that half of your meal should consist of vegetables. Actually, so. Yeah, a lot of things like avoiding fatty foods and avoiding excess intake as well, which can lead to obesity as well as diabetes. They go a very, very long way in terms of outcomes of coronary artery disease.
So, and I guess just to get you again on that, how much does high cholesterol and high blood pressure contribute to heart disease? Significant amounts?
I would say so, yeah. What we do is when we assess someone for heart disease, we look at all of these factors, and all of these factors have a role. High blood pressure and high cholesterol are actually relatively easy things to get under good control. Sometimes we can do it with simple diet and exercise. Often, though, if you have one of these conditions, sometimes we prescribe medications to keep these under good control. But often, these entities are around for a very, very long time. They can start in your 20s, and you know if they're there for about 50 years, certainly they can cause lots of problems in the future. So individuals can get tested for these very easily in their primary care physician's office, and these things really do need to be under good control because they do contribute over a very long run to having coronary artery disease and other problems with the heart.
Yeah, you touched on it too, but men versus women. Talk about that a little bit. The same or?
That's a great question, actually. There was a study that was just published this week, actually, which showed what has been a problem in cardiology for a long time, in that often individuals considered women to have a lower risk of heart disease. And the trial actually looked at women between 30 and 55 years old and who had a heart attack, and it was found that women who actually had heart disease had a very different, wide and varied presentation compared to men. Men have usually more classic symptoms such as squeezing in their chest, getting short of breath, having that pain in their chest radiating to their jaw and their arm. Women have tend to have actually very atypical symptoms, and those are symptoms that we can't ignore and women shouldn't ignore, because certain things such as stuttering chest pain, getting fatigue, you know, having dizzy spells, anything like that can be a way that a heart disease such as blockage in the arteries can present. And in this particular trial, one of the reasons why, there are a few reasons why women were underdiagnosed who had had a heart attack. One is that women typically underestimate the risk for having actually a heart attack. They feel that often that their family and other obligations override the symptoms that they're having, and often, and the other part of the equation is that we tend to sometimes underdiagnose that. Now, that was a big problem in the past, but this study shows that that's still an ongoing problem. So women, typically, if there's any kind of concern or unusual symptom that they're having, even flu-like symptoms, usually I would encourage them to go to the emergency room or at least to get a doctor's appointment on the day of their symptoms to really get evaluated for it, because it does present so differently.
So there's some real varied symptoms then.
Yeah, there really are. You know, we have classic symptoms for someone having some blockages in their arteries or having a sudden heart attack. And these symptoms include chest pain, shortness of breath with exertion. For example, if someone walks up a flight of stairs, they'll get short of breath. And often these symptoms will go away over a period of time, such as 15 or 20 minutes. If those symptoms don't resolve, then usually we recommend people go to the emergency room right away. One of the big triggers, actually, for given the time of year, one of the big triggers for people having these sorts of problems is actually shoveling snow. And we often will see individuals in the emergency room after a big snowfall with having chest pain and potentially having a heart attack. So, yeah, there is a big, very wide variation in terms of how patients present with this. Yeah. But if there's ever concern in patients, then they really should contact their primary care physician or go directly to the emergency room.
Ask, get checked out, right?
Yeah.
In your experience and in your opinion, what's the best prevention to heart disease and ways to keep heart healthy, so to speak? Does taking, you know, we all hear about the aspirin situation. Does taking 1 to 2 aspirin a day really prevent heart disease?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll tackle the second part of the question first. So an aspirin a day actually doesn't prevent you from developing coronary disease or having a heart attack. It has been shown in a small number of patients to potentially prevent a heart attack, but you have to sort of, the process of building up disease in your coronary arteries takes a long period of time, and aspirin doesn't really prevent that. In a small number of patients, it may prevent or help alleviate the symptoms of actually having a heart attack. So that's why there's often a recommendation, especially if someone's had coronary artery disease, to take an aspirin, because that can be the case. In terms of the second part of the question, what can people do? I think there's actually a lot that people can do to manage their own health issues. Certainly, what I've found is that if individuals have a regular exercise regimen, that will go an incredibly long way at preventing people from progressing to heart disease. It helps keep your weight down. It helps keeps your blood pressure down. And virtually every type of heart disease, exercise is always good for you, even if you have a significantly weak heart muscle. For example, if someone has bypass surgery, virtually every patient goes to cardiac rehab afterwards, and it's been shown that in individuals who do cardiac rehab after bypass surgery, we can reduce the rate of death within a year by 25%. So regular exercise has a huge impact on that. And also, smoking is extremely detrimental and increases your risk to a significant degree. And usually we advise people to not smoke. I mean, we always do, and try their best to not do that. Certainly, hypertension and hyperlipidemia should also be cared for and managed. Being active is important, and having great dietary habits is important as well. So,
can you describe some of the preventative tests as well as treatments and surgeries that you offer at the Mason City Clinic that our listeners should be aware of if they're struggling with heart disease or they'd like to be checked out?
Yeah. So the Mercy Heart and Vascular Center has 12 specialty physicians, and we have over 200 years cumulative experience in this area. We also have fellowships, that is, doctors who train to be cardiologists there. So that actually prompts us to be very current and knowledgeable in our subspecialty. So when it often what symptoms people describe drives the type of testing that we do. And we can do pretty much all of the testing at our center. Certainly, if someone were to present, for example, with swelling in your legs or retaining a whole bunch of fluid, often we'd recommend someone having undergoing an echo, which is an ultrasound of your heart, which is a non-invasive test, and it can tell us what the valves are doing and what the heart strength is. For example, if someone's presenting with signs and symptoms of perhaps coronary artery disease, we can do several forms of stress testing on a treadmill with EKGs attached, or sometimes we can do a chemical stress test if someone has joint problems or something like that and can't walk on a treadmill. These stress tests can actually help us determine what likelihood there is that the patient has a problem. And also, if patients have electrical problems of their hearts, we have outpatient types of monitors, and those are monitors you can wear for a day or for a couple of weeks or even for a month. That can help us figure out that, define if there's any electrical problems with the heart. If the stress tests are positive, and or if the patient just has a very high risk of having heart disease, then we'd often recommend individuals undergo an angiogram. And that's a procedure where we go through the groin, through the femoral artery, and we slide catheters to the inside of the heart and inject dye to see if there's any blockages in the arteries. And in those situations, if there are blockages that are causing problems, we usually deal with them in two ways. Often we can just do a balloon and stent, meaning that that's a procedure you do while you have the angiogram, and individuals can go home the next day. If patients have a lot of coronary disease, then sometimes the best measure is to go to surgery. So pretty much any test that an individual would need can be done at actually the Mercy Heart and Vascular Center.
Great information. It's been fun talking to you, Doctor.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to meet you and great to hear from you. We've been visiting with Dr. Matthew Fleming. To make an appointment with a cardiologist at the Mercy Heart and Vascular Institute, please call 641-494-5300 or go to www.masoncityclinic.com for more information. And again, thank you for listening.